Hey everybody, welcome to another commissioned podcast. This time we're talking about Star Wars, Return of the Jedi.
Never heard of it.
A couple differences in what we're doing here. Number one, we're live in front of a studio audience. And this is commissioned by Fernando Rodriguez, previous commissioner of What Dreams May Come and Goonies.
Which that was
won,
a good one.
Won a Baldi's Award last year. He selected Star Wars, and his note was, if you can get this done around the new Star Wars, that would be ideal. Well, we literally skipped every other movie in the queue because we wanted something that's kind of family-friendly and something that, like, was very accessible, and I don't know if, like, some of these things, like La Haine or Rigoletto, were going to get the job done, or Laura, the movie from 1944. I feel like I'm talking these other movies down. I'm just saying they're not a general audience's type of movie.
Everybody loves Star Wars.
Everybody loves Star Wars, and we're at the Huntsville, Alabama Rocket City NerdCon, so it seemed like it'd be appropriate to go deep into the commission archive list and pull out Star Wars. And we're a month. We're a month and a couple of days away from the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
It's coming up. Are you excited for the new one?
Yes, I'm excited.
Great, that was awesome.
I'm afraid that the trailers have spoiled us, though.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to go on my spoil. I don't want to go my spoiler trailer rant. It's like old hat at this point. So, what did you think of Return of the Jedi?
You know, I actually thought it was pretty good. That might be shocking to some people, but yeah, I mean, Return of the Jedi is awesome. Man, everybody, I'm sure, wants us to, like, rank our Star Wars movies.
Yes, they all do.
I don't want to do it. Can we just stop at, like, Empire Strikes Back is still the best?
Yes. Okay. I'll agree with you there.
And then so many people, like, argue about Return of the Jedi being better than New Hope. Or
some people are putting The Force Awakens
in
there.
Even Revenge of the Sith better than, like, Return of the Jedi hate Ewoks.
Whoa.
Yeah. Some people.
I think I actually like Return of the Jedi better than A New Hope.
Okay.
Like, especially, like, if you took out... I mean, it's hard to say, but, like...
A New Hope is so important. Return of the Jedi feels less important to me.
That's true, but it's more fun.
Yes, it is that. Certainly.
Like, there's a couple, like, I mean, we got a strong Ewok contingent
here. Yeah.
We're going to get to there. We haven't even gotten to the first act. All right, calm down. We got a lot of podcast here.
You're gonna lose your voice by the end of it. Trust me, I do all the time.
So should we just do like on the movies like this where everybody knows? We just kind of like launch right into it. So are you ready? I got a topic for you.
Oh, we're not gonna talk about the history, our personal histories with Return of the Jedi.
I feel like that we've got that in Star Wars. Oh, okay, yeah, sure, that's fine. Because as I was talking to the cupcake lady, who is a rabid pro Ewok proponent. Return of the Jedi is the first movie, the first Star Wars that I saw in the theater and sat all the way through. Because A New Hope came out in 77, I was born in 76, I was 4 years old when Empire Strikes Back came out, and I made my father take me out of the theater when Luke got his hand cut. The Wampa about made me crap my pants. The Space Worm did actually make me crap my pants. And then Luke getting his hand cut off made me want to flee the theater in tears. And my dad, I can say a lot about my dad, but he's a saint for doing that, because he walked out before the biggest, most iconic reveal of all time. Return of the Jedi is the first one where I sat the whole way through and enjoyed it the way a kid should enjoy Star Wars movies. What is you're a little bit younger than me, Jim. What's your relationship with it?
Yeah, I was born in the same year that Return of the Jedi came out, I think. Is that 82?
83, I think.
83? Okay, so I was 1 year old when Return of the Jedi came out. Needless to say, I did not see it in the theater.
You're not a true fan.
Not a true fan. I actually think the first time I saw this movie is on a VHS, a bad VHS. So my aunt and uncle loved to get blank VHS tapes and record stuff off TV.
Yeah.
In like the worst possible quality over right. their bad satellite, not even satellite
they're
TV.
They're the monsters that cram 6 hours TV. Of television in the.
Yeah. yeah. Oh, and they do the whole thing where they pause for the commercial so it doesn't actually record the commercial. So they have just a pure movie experience. So I saw it on a badly recorded TV version of Return of the Jedi for the first time okay. on a VHS tape.
Yeah. I mean, a whole generation of fans lived off bad VHS tapes.
Yeah, no, but it was glorious, too, because, you know, I got to see Return of the Jedi, and it was awesome, even on television.
But that was so cool, is like, when they did the advertisements for the special editions that came to theaters, it's like, for the past 20 years, fans have only seen Star Wars this way, and you had the shitty... Sorry, I'm going to try real hard not to swear, but that is not the way we do podcasts, so...
Apologies to all the children in the audience.
Only the power of the children's section that I can see from the is gonna compel me. Okay, all right. Well, like I said, I'm gonna try to keep this PG-13. What was I saying? Oh, they had that thing where it's like you're in this big theater and in the middle of the screen is this little, you know, standard definition television. And it's like, if this is the only way you've seen Star Wars, you haven't seen it. And like there's an X-Wing coming at you and then just busts out the TV screen and then it launches right into like the trailer for the entire trilogy. That was super cool. First time. Yeah. Is that the first time you've seen Star Wars in a theater?
For the special edition? Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
All right.
I was way too young to hit it in the theater the first time around.
All right. Can we talk about Star Wars now, or do we have to
keep
talking about
our really
personal relationship with Star Wars?
I thought this podcast was about us, not Return of the Jedi.
It's about many things. First up, the appropriate amount of respect to show one Lord Vader. It seems like everybody in A New Hope treats Vader like a word that rhymes with itch. The second movie, in The Empire Strikes Back, he is just force-choking fools left and right, doesn't care. Everyone's terrified of him. This movie, you know, he shows up and like he's laying down the law and he's like cracking the whip and getting the Death Star back. And then when we see like Rogue One, he's got this like castle on Mustafar or whatever. And it's weird because it kind of tried to subtly retcon that like the one Grand Admiral was in a competition with Grand Moff Tarkin. But then in A New Hope, Tarkin's actually holding Vader's leash. Did something happen between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope where Vader was on the outs with Palpatine? Because I don't understand how he got knocked down so many pegs to where he was just like...
Yeah, it's really the true threat here is the Emperor, right? Everybody's scared of the Emperor,
right?
Not so much Vader,
right? But that's not that's not the case in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. He's back on. Like I feel like he's back in. I would like to see a movie set before Rogue One and after Revenge of the Sith to show like did Vader like start to try to go back to being a good guy. Like he's like, you know what? All your BS and lies have brought me nothing but pain and suffering, Palpatine. I'm going to like I don't know. Adopt a puppy. I'm going to start a can drive for homeless people in Coruscant. And Palpatine found out and like, no, I'm putting an end to this and you're going to be back. I'm going to give Moff Tarkin your leash and I was going to humiliate you. I mean, get you back on. Because he knew his boy is going to show up and really, really test Vader's evilness. And Vader wasn't evil enough. So he had to crack down on him.
I'm thinking maybe it happened when he became more machine than man. Like that kind of like brought him down.
Did you see Revenge of the Sith? That happened in Revenge of the Sith.
I know. Yeah.
Literally, 3/4 of him was removed. Machine. He's more machine than man now.
But he's really got the full force of the Empire behind him in A New Hope. And then in A New Hope, the Death Star is blown up, right? And it's like, oh boy, we're not actually that awesome. The Rebels kind of scored a point on us. I feel like the Emperor has a lot to prove, and Vader being second fiddle has even more to prove.
Are you saying that the Empire striking back in The Empire Strikes Back was as much about Vader getting his groove back on?
Yes.
As it was the Rebel Alliance getting punished?
Certainly.
Okay. Okay. That's how Anakin got his groove back, is the subtitle for Empire Strikes Back. I will accept that.
That's canon now.
So, like, again, if you haven't listened to Bald Move Podcast, these are just essentially random observations that I'm making.
Does torture work on droids?
My second point, why would you program a robot to feel pain? Is that something that Jabba does as a mod? Like what possible, like, you know, I get it, you feel pain in the sense of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, as I take damage, My sensors report signals that tell me that, and you would call it pain. But he's not like, ah, God, my arm, this really stings. You know, it's like he's very stoic about it because it's just data, right?
Yeah.
Not like Brent Spiner data. It's just data. It's just data. It's data that he's getting into his mate. And it's like, okay, I gotta pull my hand out of the fire, or it's gonna go up in flames. These robots are begging. Begging for the sweet release of death in Jabba's torture chamber.
And they're screaming. Yeah, it's... I'm not sure how that works.
My theory is that Jabba employs a team of hackers to put in pain subroutines on the robots just so he can punish them.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, like, you know, an astromech, like, I don't know. But yeah, R2-D2 screams when he gets hit by a turbo laser. What good is that? I don't want my astromech screaming in pain as he's taking fire. I want him to fix my nail down that stabilizer. I don't care if you're on fire. Your dying thing should be nailing down that stabilizer.
Yeah, we'll replace your circuits when we get back. Just right. Fix the ship.
Right. And that's also like, there's this low-key, like, second-class citizens throughout all of the, like, the only one that gives a hoot about R2 and at the end of A New Hope is C-3PO.
Live audience, ladies and gentlemen.
Everybody else,
children,
like,
in the audience.
Like Luke's like, oh, I'm sure we'll get R2 fixed up, no problem. Like C-3PO, he's like sweating bullets. Why would you program a robot to feel emotional pain for other robots? And then treat them like slaves?
Yeah, that seems pretty sadistic on Jabba's part.
Also, to make the point that Luke Skywalker is not a hero, he sells C-3PO and R2-D2 to Jabba the Hutt without their consent. They didn't even know that this was part of the plan.
I think R2 did.
Okay.
R2 goes in there knowing, because he recorded the message,
right?
He told
R2, because
R2
can't communicate with anybody. It's like telling your mute deaf friend that, like, all the plan, you can't hear and you can't communicate. You have no mouth, but you must scream. Ah!
No, the only person he could have told is the one person he didn't tell, which is C-3PO.
He's a monster.
Yeah, R2's the biggest villain of the movie.
Luke comes in this movie force choking people like he's one lightning bolt shy of a Sith Lord. He's slave trading droids. He's force choking pig guards. And he's like, I haven't covered, this is another level of storytelling. George Lucas is like, he's saying that, like, you know, this guy's like on a razor's edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's this close to kissing his sister and going to the dark side. Did you know, like, some things, like, in the expanded universe is cool. Like, did you see that as C-3PO and R2-D2 are coming into Jabba's palace, there's like this horrifying glass spider thing that's crawling in the background?
The EU helpfully
tells us that is some race of space monk that has had their brains removed,
right,
and put in these glass bowls in the spider body, and these, like, and now the thing is like, I'm pretty shaky in my EU at this point. I can't remember if the plot is these monks did that because they're less ascetic, and the joke is that Jabba has moved into their, like, monastery and, like, has turned it into this palace of hedonism and torture and pain, or Jabba himself did that to the monks because he's such a cruel and bad guy. Anyone know a ruling on that? Cupcake lady?
All right. The EU on that is you're right on the first one. You're pretty close on the first one. Except for when Jabba moved in, he basically enslaved them.
Okay. Jabba's big on the enslavement. So, lying and it's definitely part of his character.
That's Jabba's MO.
Do you know what's part of Bib Fortuna? So Bib Fortuna is the Twi'lek major domo. He's always referred to as a major domo. Only other major domo I know is the Toucan Sam Bird in Lion King. Still not sure about the rules and responses. I guess he's a butler. He's got quite the flair for the dramatic.
He does.
Did you check out him, like, Vanna Whiting R2-D2 as he's like, you know, as he's like, I felt like he was one of Bob Barker's beauties, like, going over a box of Raisin Bran, like, you know. And also, right before he leads the droids to Jabba, he strikes this pose like, Nibara no Jabba! Te wanga wanga! And he's like, just vamps off screen. Where did that come from?
I mean, it was probably the actor himself going, this is my chance.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
I'm going to learn how to tease. I'm going to strike some poses, and it's fame and fortune from here on out.
Yeah. This is the last one they're making.
By the way, like, Did that guy die? Because, like, where is he at the cons? Where is Bib Fortuna at all the cons?
I don't know.
He is? Okay, well, there you go. Somber note from the cupcake lady. Energy. okay, so.
I felt like I would have known that answer 10 years ago because me and my friend group, you included, we all had this game where we would just play Star Wars trivia while we were stuck out in field service for hours on end. And I had... it's amazing the stuff that I retain and the stuff that I don't because... So Jabba's little disgusting lizard creature, the Kowakian lizard monkey, as his race is known. Uh-huh. I don't remember his name, but I remember his race.
Okay.
Why do I remember that?
I can
tell you
Crumb.
Three different types of land speeders.
Salacious
yes.
Crumb.
Yes, it's Salacious
Crumb. I just beat you in Star Wars trivia.
Well,
it took
I told
me 27
you
years, but I've got the crown, and it's here recorded. No one can dispute it.
All right, but I get to ask you a question back. Name me three different types of land speeders. Three different models.
God damn it. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry. I should have had it. You know what? We should have a swear jar.
Yeah,
and at the end of we donate to the library. How could they be mad at that?
We just hand it to the children in the audience.
It's the perfect amount of
go
the
buy
judo.
Some candy, kids.
It's like, yeah, we're
forget
swearing,
this
but
ever
it's,
happened.
It's for a good cause. So it's all like the T-51, like the
Bespin Motors Void Spider THX-1138. Got the Ubrickian 9000 Z-01. It's
all right. Well, you got me on
stupid.
That. You got
it's
me
stupid.
On that.
I don't know why I remember this stuff.
I'm not a gearhead.
You know what I really remember? I remember. And this, kids, cover your ears.
Yeah.
I remember rewinding about 1,000 times to try and see if I could find the mess up with the Twi'lek's boob in the dance scene.
Totally.
Did you know about that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
When she gets...
We got a wardrobe malfunction that
when,
made
when
it
when she
on
gets
screen.
Dropped to her death...
Yep.
The one piece of titillation... Well, not the one piece of titillation Star Wars universe, but yeah, there's a nip slip. There's a Janet Jackson-style nip slip as she's sliding to her death.
Yeah. Oh, man, I rewound that horrible TV VHS copy so many times, just trying to see it, but it was so blurry. Blurry.
Yeah, well, we'll have to check it out. I should have checked that out on a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Crystal clear. I bet in the special edition they airbrushed it out.
Yeah, they turned it into a creature
the
or something.
The guy on
the
black star thing that Janet Jackson had on to cover it up. Can we talk about Jabba? Is he one of the most perfect character designs of all time or what?
He's great, yeah. And the fact that he's a puppet and not CG like he would have been now, or like he has been since then.
Like a six-man puppet, there's dudes that are controlling his eyes, there's a dude that controls his mouth, there's one dedicated dude that's controlling his tongue, there's a person controlling his tails, and both there's one guy for each arm. It's amazing, and it looks so good, and I want to know, the people doing the CGI for the special editions, have they ever seen Star Wars? Because how can you take Jabba from A New Hope and think he's not the right color? He's not the right shape. He's got like maybe he had work done. Maybe Jabba was super ugly and like he became a criminal, like a real crime lord between A New Hope and Return of the Jedi. And he had some work done. He had Chin's job. He had his teeth fixed. He had his nose crooked. You know, it was straight, but now it's crooked. I don't understand how these guys can get the CGI for like Yoda. And Jabba and say, yeah, we did a good job. Let's cut and print this. Because this puppet looks so good.
All the puppets look so good. I mean, I can't say enough about Frank Oz's team. Like, that scene where Yoda dies looks fantastic. I mean, that looks like an actual creature that's on screen.
Right.
As opposed to a lot of the CGI that you see even nowadays.
Right.
Those types of things. Yeah, I think it was just a matter of them trying to do cutting-edge stuff that had never been done before.
Yeah.
Because they were really on the cusp of CG stuff, like CG creatures especially.
And that's why it's like, I was watching this, I was like, is... Because there's a lot of talk about, like, you know, when The Force Awakens came out, like, it's now the second best or third best Star Wars. I'm like, I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about The Force Awakens because I think it's awesome. But as I was looking at, like, Jabba's set design, like, how really amazing and how many distinct set pieces are designed. He's got his hookah with the lower float bowl for his frogs that he can throw into his mouth. He's got the, you know, the retractable throne that leads to the Rancor pit. He's got the sail barge. Like, there's so much awesome set design, and it makes so many cool, fun adventures. People can slip and fall down and fight this big monster. And, you know, R2 can rocket a lightsaber over to Luke as he's about ready to go into the Sarlacc pit. And the Sarlacc pit? Sarlacc pit. It's super cool.
Yeah, no, the whole sequence is awesome.
What's cooler than the Sarlacc pit in The Force Awakens?
Nothing.
Just I'm talking about just set. Just a set.
A lightsaber with two littler lightsabers coming out the side.
The lightsaber mustache.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No, there's nothing as cool in it. And partially it's because this was kind of stuff that I hadn't seen before, you know?
Right.
It had like this imagination that as a kid just went beyond my own in a way that I'd never seen. And now as a 35-year-old man, it's a lot harder to get back to that place with the new stuff. So
yeah.
I don't know. I really like it. The other set design that I think is really cool, if maybe a little questionable as far as function goes, is the throne room, the Emperor's throne room.
Yes.
Such a cool set. I mean, that feels like where that guy sits.
OSHA would never approve that.
No, it's just an open pit to the power core. It's insane.
Emperor's guards need to like form a union and get some guardrails in there.
But it's so cool looking.
Oh, yeah.
I just really love it.
Can we talk about so
I don't want to leave Jabba. Let's talk
I want to talk about the musical interlude.
Oh boy.
And the special editions.
It adds nothing, right?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if Lucas understands his own movie sometimes, because I thought the whole point of Jabba's band is they kind of suck. You're not going to have like the best music, like you're not going to have a really impressive Broadway style musical show in Jabba's palace. You're going to have some seedy barfly outlaw biker gang kind of, it's like the Blues Brothers. It's not something on Broadway. And like,
so Jabba's also stingy because he's got the money to hire a good band.
He has no taste. He decorates his palace with slave girls. He has no...
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about that, too.
And that's the thing. Like, I felt like this... The thing is, like, not only can he not think of a better way to introduce it than loop footage of Jabba and make it in the subtitle say, ah, do that again, which is already a crime, but, like, the three backup singers, they're doing the ooh, nah, nah, and they got the weird mummy-looking dudes banging gongs in the background, like, doing this, like, weird King Kong skit. It's terrible. It's terrible. They got Boba Fett macking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
at least he got another scene.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, the thing is like in the I also that Lucas didn't pay attention to like the state of the art in the EU because they had told like a really fine story about Boba Fett and the Mandalorians and how they're this noble race of warriors and how like Boba Fett is very principled. A bounty hunter, and nope, forget all that. Boba Fett is just a straight Mac. He's got a frosty beer. He's making time with the you know backup singers in the band. Like I don't. And then he also
gotta relax.
His death is a joke. It's literally like not only does he go out in a very shameful fashion, but then the movie accents that by making a Sarlacc belch when he eats him.
Yeah, no, it's. So much of the stuff that is added, in my opinion, to make the movie less serious and sillier and maybe more family-friendly, more fun. But then the super confusing thing is they remove what might be my favorite part of Return of the Jedi, which is the Yub Nub song at the end.
Yes.
They take that out and replace it with something that's so much more boring. Oh, easily, yeah. I don't know why you would add this stuff that's supposed to make it more fun and then take that out of the ending.
Okay.
I think I know why. I think he wanted to make it less of a localized celebration.
Right.
But still, keep the Yub Nub song and just let us have that.
Right. Can we talk about our complicated relationship with Slave Leia?
Please. Yeah.
Okay. Really walking through a minefield here, Jim.
Okay. I want to, real quickly, I'm sure we'll talk about the ethics of it, but I want to leave the ethics out for a moment and ask Jabba why. Because, like, let's turn this around and let's say I'm Jabba.
Okay,
and I'm sitting up on the dais, and I'm thinking, boy, I really need a sexy slave. Am I going to go find a Jabba to put
on a chain?
You're going to
find a female hut. You're going to put her on a chain. You're going to make her dance and wiggle.
That would be
terrifying. As a Terran human, you're going to have this slug wiggling on the chain, and everyone's going to bring her in for a nice kiss.
No, I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it. So why is Jabba so attracted to Leia is my question.
Or any humanoid.
Yeah.
Like, they've got the wrong number of legs. They got the wrong number of arms. They presumably got the wrong number of many other things that a slug like Jabba would find sexy. I don't know. It's inexplicable.
Yeah.
It's hard to defend it just as a science fiction concept.
Right.
But also, I mean, the thing about so many of our men from our generation, like, that was our first exposure to sexuality. Like, I'm 7 years old, I'm sitting in a theater. I was not prepared for Carrie Fisher in a metal bikini chained to this slug. Like, you're not only exposing me to the sexualization and objectification of Carrie Fisher's body, you're also throwing some weird BDSM psychosexual aspect into it. Like, you're trying to raise, I guess, a generation of degenerates on that stuff. The other thing is, like, so, like, you know, as a young man and a teenager and a young adult, I'm like, well, that's the pinnacle of sexiness. And then I start listening to, like, what Carrie Fisher had to say. And, like, she was, like, genuinely bummed out that, you know, the rebel princess leader of the rebellion is going to be reduced to the sex object for Jabba, and she's going to be in this bikini that makes her uncomfortable, and she's going to be chained to him. And the bonus for her is, like, well, you do get to strangle him with his own chain, which is cool, but if Han Solo is not going to wear a metal bikini and get chained to Jabba the Hutt, even though that makes just as much sense.
That would kind of be awesome to see, though.
You know, Han escapes from Jabba's clutches, and he gets to say some cold-blooded smack before he shoots him between the eyes with a blaster. Mm-hmm. Leia has to choke Jabba to death with a sex toy, essentially.
I think it's supposed to demonstrate just how bad of a being Jabba is. But yeah, you're right. It does send some mixed messages, certainly, to the people who are watching it and maybe weren't well-versed in the topics at hand when they saw it.
Like I said, it's like it's an iconic moment for me as a young man, but
right.
really so bummed out Carrie Fisher. And it's in retrospect, like every time I see the continue, like, you know, I see like the toys of Slave Leia and the posters and stuff. It's like, I don't know how I feel about
this. Yeah, the cosplays kind of surprised me.
Well, I mean,
that still happens. I mean, I know it's an iconic thing,
right?
And it's very easy to recognize, but
and it gets a lot
of
attention. Kind of
weird and gross.
How
has Jabba lasted so long as a criminal underlord? Because literally every single hero in this movie has infiltrated his compound within the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Right under his nose.
Right.
And yes, he catches like two of them, but one of them has a grand plan to take him out.
The only black man in the Star Wars right. galaxy
unrecognized.
Is just going around pulling his mask down at every opportunity.
Winking at,
has no
at
idea.
Leia every time he passes her. Yeah.
Yeah. No, totally. Speaking of Leia, I do think that She should have played a little cooler when she's going to unfreeze like Han. Like, she lowers the thing. The first thing goes wrong is it drops and makes this kaboom, boom. Like, if I was sneaking out of my parents' house, that's what low stakes I'm talking about. And step one of my plan made a large boom, boom, boom. I would, like, go back to my room and pretend to be asleep for at least 10 minutes and just see how the scene unfolded. Do I hear footsteps?
Just get them used
to it. Do I hear doors
enter? Yeah.
Do I hear creaking above? Did my parents hear that? No? Okay. I will then sneak back to the front door and try to open it up without less boom this time. She's like, pauses for 1 second, flips a bunch of switches. You got this wow, wow, wow melting sound. Your boyfriend pops out. You start croaking in not even a stage whisper about carbonite sickness, and he's asking questions at full volume. Where am I? Who are you?
Why can't I see?
What's going on? Jabba's like, no wonder you got caught. This wasn't, like, as a kid, I thought this was some kind of elaborate plan by Jabba. No, she was just noisy as hell.
That's why he's laughing, because it was a bad plan.
It was a bad plan, but I think it was part of the plan. Like, I kind of think after you're supposed to understand that the whole plan was everyone to be captured except for Lando, who's been there again the longest. He arrived shortly after Empire Strikes Back, right? The plan, I mean, it's a complicated plan, but the plan was the droids would get captured, and C-3PO is not part of any of this plan. For whatever reason, R2's got the lightsaber. Luke's going to jump off the diving board. He's going to catch the thing. He's going to free everybody. Han's going to be blind and shoot. I mean, it really doesn't hold together.
Yeah, it's a rough plan. I feel like Luke just came up to everybody and said, you know what? Go get captured, guys. I've got this.
And the reason that all went together is because Han, he's the only one that's willing to say, you all have delusions of grandeur. You're going to do in here and do what? Your plan is to all get captured and thrown to the Rancor and you get sexually slaved. And no. Like, look, I'm the smuggler. Let's actually smuggle people in and have hidden compartments. Let's do this commando raid. We really missed Han Solo. He was like I think that he's actually the brains of the outfit.
But let's not give him too much credit, because he does screw up pretty badly on the moon.
Okay.
Once they get
don't get to the third act, man. You're rushing me. We're still in the first act.
But I just don't want to. I don't want to get too high on Han right now.
Yeah.
Because he brings himself low later.
Can we talk about the Han and Chewie reunion?
Okay.
That's a genuine moment.
It's a great moment, yeah.
Like, it makes the stuff in The Force Awakens even better. Like, you know, Chewie is the only one that really reacted and was that bummed out to Han dying.
Mm-hmm.
Even Leia's just like, eh, you know, kind of, a, you know, and in retrospect.
She saw it coming. It was as she foretold.
We've been on the outs for a long time. He's like, I thought he was just going around collecting space junk for the last 5 years anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a bad example for our son. He's now a murderous Jedi. Makes sense. Like Chewie really loves Han. He's like petting him and hugging him and like,
Or does he just have the life debt and he kind of has to keep up appearances?
Well, you know, I have no answer for that.
Okay.
Like, it's like, at what point does a life, like, maybe this Wookiee life debt is just a way for them to cover that they fall in love that quick. like, you know, Wookiee's in line behind you and you're like, hey, you know what? I'm flush this league. I want to pick up the guy behind me. I want to pick up the guys behind me tab. He rushes out of a restaurant. I owe you a life debt. I can't possibly pay off this burrito. I have to follow you around, and my life is yours now. Like, I feel like the Wookiees are just, like, that quick to fall in love, so they just invented this life debt so it seems like this really cool warrior ethos, and really they're just, like, love sluts.
Okay, sure.
Speaking of special editions, mm-hmm. Did you like the random Sebulba jackass creeping around the throne room? This is the special editions, because the special editions came before we even knew Sebulbas existed.
Yeah.
Or what are the Sebulba race?
I don't remember.
Doug. They're Dougs.
That sounds
right.
He's
an especially nasty Doug named Sebulba. Now it's all coming back to him. He's just, apropos of nothing, he's just creeping around on his weird hand feet. Just to give an F you for everyone that hates the prequels.
Oh, no.
Want to forget about the prequels? No, I'm going to insert another stupid scene into the special editions just so you can. I'm surprised that, like, Jar Jar wasn't out in the background making out with Boba Fett. Just to inflict maximum pain. Because Lucas is that big of a dick.
And if you're listening to this podcast while you watch the special editions for the first time, just wait till the end. Just wait till the end.
Okay.
Because that is the ultimate.
I think it's time to talk about the Rancor fight. I don't have much to say except for thank God he did not replace the Rancor with some CGI monstrosity. Because again, the Rancor, like, did you just fart or was that a shoe malfunction? Okay, just want to get that on the record. Because we were all thinking it. Well, you can do that at will now. All right. Solid podcasting. Stop motion is like this art form that's probably going to go the way of the dodo. We're never going to see it again. And I think that some of the Star Wars stuff, you think of the AT-AT Walker, you think of some of the Tauntaun work, you think of the Rancor, like these are the pinnacles of stop motion. And they still look really, really good. And to replace them with CGI, especially the level of CGI we see in the Star Wars special editions would be a crime. And I'm glad they didn't do it.
Yeah, this was apparently supposed to originally be a guy in a suit akin to, like, Godzilla. And they did that. They went all out, and there are pictures out there on the internet of the original suit. And it looks ridiculous. And George Lucas hated the effect, and he said, no, we have to do this another way. So they built this 18-inch puppet of the Rancor and put it in this, like, 30-inch set. So what you're seeing there is actually really, really small and is combined with Luke scenes that are filmed obviously at full scale, and it's combined seamlessly, and it looks really, really good.
I mean, like I said, it's special effecty, but like to the level that anything special effecty.
Yeah,
like there's a very few films where I'm not aware that I'm watching special effects. And when you are not aware, it's usually stuff that's so subtle that like you could get away with probably a matte painting. So like I'm just like as I was watching, I'm like, I wonder why. I mean, even Lucas himself must have thought like, I nailed this. It's 1983, and this lived up to my imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the reason they didn't use the guy in the suit, because he hated it.
Sarlacc pit, on the other hand,
yeah, that's not great. I felt like the Sarlacc pit was fine as is.
Like Lucas' original vision included an uncircumcised penis down there eating people. I really want this phallic thing out there grabbing people and eating them, but we can't, the technology for that big of an uncircumcised unit doesn't exist.
They could get the 18-inch one, but not
it's got to be man size, so we can just swallow them whole. And like to me, like the static nature of the Sarlacc pit, like it's just giant mouth in the sand connected to God knows what. It's the scary part of it.
It can't get you, but if you fall into it, you're done.
Yeah, now it's like Little Shop of Horrors down there.
Yeah.
Audrey too. I don't understand like that. Another like that.
They don't seamlessly combine the CG there with onset model.
It's like it's the laziest thing I've ever seen because it's just clipping all through the mouth of the Sarlacc pit. Like
and
when
the
it
person
comes
who
out,
falls in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
And the lighting is wrong. The texture is wrong. Everything is wrong about it.
Like maybe if that is his vision, he's like, okay, I got CGI. I'm going to flex my CGI muscles. But he looks at him like, oh no, that's bad. Like seriously, I see this guy's hand coming out the other side of its mouth. Like it's not working. Cut it. But he left it in.
Yeah.
That and Sebulba. It worked. But the battle itself is still so damn entertaining.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, Boba Fett goes out like that. Uh-huh. But everything else about it I love. It's got comic elements with Han and Chewie and Lando. Right. It's got very exciting heroic elements with Luke and Leia.
It's kind of a love letter to this like Errol Flynn like pirate type stuff where people are like swinging from ship to ship and jumping, and like Luke is very much like this pirate king that's slashing people down. And it, like also just the setup, it's like this, like the way he films it, it's like some kind of Western where like, you know, you see Lando and then you see R2 getting in position and like Luke's giving us, and there's like that little drum beat, like every cut it's like dun. Dun, dun, dun. And then all hell breaks loose when Luke lights the lightsaber and the Star Wars theme kicks in. It's like the baddest ass five minutes of... Again, I did it again. I'm sorry. It's so awesome from that point in the movie until it really doesn't let its foot off the gas until they magnet 3PO and R2 out of the ground and take off on the sail barge.
Yeah. And even then, you're off to the next adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, do we want to go to the Luke and Yoda part?
Well, I also want to say like how great the character Han Solo is because, like, I don't know a person in this generation that has more charisma than Harrison Ford. Like, Kurt Russell is in that neighborhood, and if you go back, there's like John Wayne's where like anything this guy says, like Luke is saying, you know, you don't miss much because don't forget I grew up here. He's like, yeah, you're gonna die here. Uh-huh. Convenient, like. That's kind of a bad line, but he smirks and it works. He smirks and
smirks
it works.
Smirks and works. T-shirt.
There you go. Someone can make $20 off of that. Okay, you wanted to move on?
Yeah, so let's talk about the Yoda scene. I mentioned earlier how great the puppeteering is, and I think I can't stress it enough. I just love the character of Yoda. Empire Strikes Back Yoda is maybe one of my all-time favorite characters when Luke first lands and he gives him... just a complete runaround about being this Jedi Master. And then this episode, you have a much different Yoda, you know, a much more somber Yoda who's about to die, who's trying to impart one final word of wisdom to his student.
Oh, and I dig it. Like, I'm not a religious person, but, like, when he's talking about, like, death being inevitable, it's the way of all things, the way of the Force, like, it's a pretty nice way to approach the afterlife.
And you still have that bit of humor. 900 years old, you become a little bit not, huh?
Right. But Yoda's ridiculous and shameful attempt to dodge Luke's honest questions about his parenthood is hilarious.
Yeah. Like Luke's like, he should have just said, talk to Obi once I'm gone.
Yeah, one more thing, Master Yoda. Is Vader my father? Oh, yeah, rest I must. Rest I must. he's literally turning over and pulling his blankets over his head like, I'm not here. I'm not here. And like, come on. Come on. And like this next 5 minutes of Yoda and Obi-Wan's ghost tag teaming to gaslight the hell out of one Luke Skywalker. Like, oh, it's not our fault. It's all from the certain point of view.
Yeah.
Holy moly. 2017 Aaron is like, oh yeah, certain point of view. That's a cloak that can cover a lot of BS. Yeah.
So Yoda tells Luke to pass on what you've learned. I'm curious to see what they do with that in The Last Jedi.
Because it seems like it blew up in his face.
Yes. Yes. And Luke Skywalker is very much, from what I can tell in the previews, against the idea of another Jedi. He's against the Jedi Order at that point. So it'll be interesting to see if he's going to pass on that information to Rey.
And I remember as a kid, like, this scene really kicks the kid stakes into high gear, because I didn't know that Luke couldn't die, and he's the last Jedi, and Yoda dies, and he puts a lot of heavy weight on this kid's shoulders, and I'm like, I'm freaking out. Like, there's, like, huge, like, the stakes of the universe, plus I was a Luke Skywalker fan. You know, what's going to happen to him? I'm really scared. Around this point, they cut to Darth Vader, and throughout the movie, him and Emperor are talking about their plans adjusting. There's like this parallel plan of the, you know, the rebels trying to blow up the Death Star, and Vader and the Emperor cackling about how they're just falling into their trap. And like at this movie, the Emperor gives a speech about everything that's happening as I foreseen it. Like, bull crap. You either foresee stuff or you don't. You didn't foresee everything, because if you did, you'd be cackling at the thought of your dumb ass falling down a reactor shaft, shooting lightning out of your butt, and like just like is the Emperor delusional? He can't possibly have foreseen that.
I mean, I certainly think he is delusional. But isn't there a certain kind of fog around things with strong emotions in your green sight or whatever the hell they call it?
I don't know. I honestly don't like. I mean,
because
like,
that's what Yoda tells Luke in Empire Strikes Back, right?
That's true. Right. His
vision is cloudy. Although he could be lying to him from a certain point of view.
Maybe
this
Yoda's
is very cloudy.
Maybe Yoda's delusional too. I mean, that's the thing. Like, as an adult, I don't think the Jedi are all they're cracked up to be. Like in the prequels, they seem like they're just humorless. They've run amok. Like, maybe 10,000 years ago, the Jedi had some kind of, like, reasonable handle on love and fear and, like, a balance and a happy home life. But at some point, they became these, like, weird, masochistic monks that denied all emotion that would make them human. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Mandalorian or Calamarian or, whatever the hell Yoda is. I don't know. But, like, I just thought that's weird. The whole point in this movie, the Emperor is just talking about how everything's just going exactly how he saw it, and then he gets thrown down a reactor shaft.
But you always cut to Darth Vader going, yeah, I foresaw something too, dude.
Yeah.
This was my vision. And the Emperor's like, strange that I have not.
Right.
You know? So I feel like Darth Vader is getting a different set of visions.
Interesting.
That may include the death of the Emperor.
All right. Admiral Ackbar.
Yeah.
Underrated, overrated, or properly rated as a character?
Properly rated as a meme, certainly.
That's the thing. Like, I feel like I really liked Ackbar, but the meme has made me realize every single time since I've watched this movie that from the second Ackbar is introduced, all he wants to do is run away. Like, he can't find the car keys to the Calamari battlecruiser. Oh, it's you're gonna have to turn around. He gets in, only got a quarter tank of gas. Oh, you know, maybe we should just turn. It's like every single thing happens, and like if it wasn't for Lando, they would have ran away and the whole thing would have been screwed up.
Yeah.
Ackbar is the biggest coward in the galaxy. And the meme, all it says, it's a trap. That has ruined my view, because I thought Ackbar is like a brilliant character design, and also he looks like $1 million. This is a dude with a foam squid head on his real head, and I defy you to like detect that as you're watching the movie. Mm-hmm. Just like no one looks at Yoda and's like, oh, that's just a puppet. Like, it's just a real character, but he's also the biggest coward in the galaxy.
Yeah, no, he is. Do we want to talk about the second Death Star stuff yet?
Sure.
Okay, so a lot of people get up in arms about this movie's overall plot, which is essentially a repeat of the first movie,
right,
of Episode 4, because it has a second Death Star. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this last night, and I think this is actually a pretty brilliant strategy on the Emperor's part.
Right.
Because let's think about this for a second. So Admiral Ackbar very astutely points out it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is designed to lure the rebels in. The rebels cannot resist a juicy target like a second Death Star.
Sure.
And they know they beat the first.
Lost
They're
the
like,
flames.
Hey, guys, we got this.
Right.
No problem. It's designed to lure the rebels in and deal a fatal blow by, you know, bringing all of their ships, all of their power into one spot.
Right.
Leaving the super weapon totally intact to then dominate the rest of the galaxy.
Right.
If they can just deliver that final blow. It's also purpose-built to really peeve off Luke.
Right.
And turn him to the dark side. I mean, this is a This is not a single fold plan. It is a multifaceted plan that I think is really smart on the Emperor's part.
Plus, like, the whole idea of, like, oh, you know, the Death Star's got a fatal flaw. Why would you try again? Like, that's, you know, in the Manhattan Project, they screwed up one of the reactors and it killed a scientist. The U.S. government's like, well, nukes, man, not never again. Or, like, let's say they dropped one on Hiroshima and it fizzled. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure the rest of the government's like, yeah, this nuke stuff isn't going to pan out. Like, there was a flaw in a super weapon. They could blow up a planet at will.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they would never try again is ridiculous, because especially in light of Rogue One, where it was a sabotage, like, we will fix that. That will never happen again. The only flaw is that they should have waited like another week till they installed the shield generators, because if they couldn't have gone down to the moon and blown up the shield generators, the rebels would have been boned super hardcore.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's
that,
like,
Tidarium was not flying.
Like, how many James Bonds have been about him trying to stop someone from getting nukes, or they've got nukes and they can't use them? Like, no one's like, oh, nukes again. Like, the Death Star is the nukes of the Star Wars galaxy. Of course, of course they're going to try to keep building them.
And they fixed the problem, too.
Yes.
It wasn't like they shot down the same exhaust port the second time.
Plus, like, the unfinished Death Star is a really cool design. It looks cool on screen. It looks cool that they're, like, how are you going? It'd be one thing if they just flew the trench, blew it up again. But they, like flying into the superstructure was super cool. And, like, higher stakes, more excitement. I'm totally fine. Like, in fact, the next two Star Wars movies can be essentially going to blow up a Death Star, and I don't care so long as the rest of the movie's good. Because that is something I think the Empire would try to do. And if the Empire tried to do it, I think it's something the Rebels would try to stop.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you feel about The Force Awakens then. But
I mean, that's just the Death much Star planet.
Right.
But, like, again,
it's a larger Death Star.
Yeah, like, if what's cooler than blowing up a planet, blowing up an entire solar system. That's something that I think the First Order would want to be interested in, and that's something I think the Rebels would try to stop. Like, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's super weapons. Just because they're, like, space super weapons doesn't make it dumb, unless you think all James Bond are dumb, because it's dealing with financial crime and nuclear weapons. Can we talk about Admiral Nita?
Okay,
I don't think he gets enough credit for being a survivor. Or, alternatively, maybe Vader's not as big an a-hole as we think. Because most of the people he executes in the movies are either outrageously disrespectful to him.
Or, like, completely incompetent.
Like the one governor, it's like, oh, you're a horrifying warlock ways. They're so stupid and dumb and lame. And, like, yeah, you're going to get choked. You're talking smack to your superior. And then, like, you know, Admiral Ozzel, he's a joke. He's a joke. Mm-hmm. He banked on a military tactic that was unwise and alerted the rebels and they raised their shields, so he gets choked to death. One dude, I don't know what his problem was. Oh, he let Han Solo escape when he was latched on
with
the back
garbage
of his bridge.
Yeah.
It's like if, like, Han Solo was hiding in the trunk of a state trooper's squad car, and oh, he got away. Yeah, force choke him. He's incompetent. He's stupid. Like, you don't dispatch some TIE fighter. Like, if he launched one TIE fighter to look around, he would have seen Han Solo, and they would have been boned. So Admiral Nita, like he goes up and he's like, "Are you going to let this guy through?" He's like, "Well, yeah. I mean, it's an older code, but it checks out. It's by the books." And Vader, he doesn't force choke him because he's doing something a competent commander would do. Like, I feel like that Vader gets a bad rap because the upper management of the Empire is terrible.
See, I read the Nita scene a little differently. I read it as Darth Vader wanted this to happen, and if he hadn't wanted Luke to get in there and Admiral Nita was about to clear him, he would have been force choked.
But why?
Because it's an old code.
It's an old code, but that is like, was the X, like, okay. That's like saying, like, you get milk out of the container and it expires on November 5th and it's November 3rd. Yeah, it's old milk.
What's the point of changing your codes
out
if you're going to take
my cereal
old codes?
For sure. Like, no one does that. Like, it's
what's
either
the point of changing your codes if you're going to accept old codes, though?
But the code has a shelf life, and without that
and
knowledge,
and the shelf life has expired, hence
no,
the new code.
No, he said it's an older code. It didn't say it was expired.
Older, in my mind, means there are newer ones that are better.
I'm just saying. That is evidence not in available from the boot. And I think Admiral Nita, survivor, competent leadership, maybe should run for emperor.
I think just lucky.
I think he's ready for the next step. And Vader, not as big of a jerk as people make him out to be.
Who's a little less competent in my mind is Luke. Why did Luke come along for this ride? He knows about the Force,
he's
right?
A danger
he knows. For all of his friends, too?
I mean,
this is the entire rebellion we're talking about at stake, and Luke is like, yeah, probably shouldn't have come, guys. I should have told you this back before we launched into this mission.
Right.
But, yeah, Darth Vader can totally see me right now.
He is in a minivan with half of Vader's immediate family. A Vader yeah. who can reach out to him through the Force and say, so, you know, and, like, at his beck and call, and, yeah, it's a little... Little, I don't. But
all
I mean,
because he wants to settle his daddy issues.
Well, plus
he's also selfish.
He's also a Jedi Master because, like, you know, the Emperor and Vader are there. Like, you know, in retrospect, look at that. Then he just gives himself up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's acting on visions of his own. That's the thing. Like, everyone's acting on the visions and voices they're hearing in their head. And how can you even criticize that action? We're watching crazy damaged people. Like bounce off each other like pinballs, and at the end the good guys win. So yay.
Yeah, it all works out.
It's real life. That's how real life works. Man, what else are we going to talk about? We just hit a lull, and there's an audience.
No, I got tons more.
Okay. Can we talk about the speeder bike scene?
Yeah, that's where I was going too.
Again,
it still looks great.
It looks great because all they did is they took a guy with a Steadicam, and they told him to walk through a redwood forest. And they filmed that at 1 frame per second, and when they play it at full speed, it looks terrifyingly fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a super cool concept. And the rhythm of that scene, where it's like, speeder bike or scout trooper sees him, takes off, Luke and Leia go after him, then there's two other guys are kind of waiting in the bushes, and they get behind, and then now Luke's got to, like, jump to, and it's super cool, and it's like a set piece that has, like, all this different levels of velocity and verticality. Like, Luke mm-hmm. has to jump off, and now he's just got to do this matador routine. Like, it's amazing how much set piece they got out of that, like, you know, the idea of, like, we're going to race motorcycles through a jungle.
Yeah, no, it's still an amazing scene to this day. I think the one part where I'd start to scratch my head is when the stormtrooper comes back for Luke.
Yeah.
Because his goal is not to kill Luke. I mean, if he wanted to do that, he would have stayed and fought instead of running away on a speeder bike.
Why don't you think his goal is to kill Luke?
He wants to get away to warn the other,
oh,
the
yeah,
other
you're
troops.
Right.
Well, that's the whole point of that scene. Go catch him before they warn the others.
That's true.
And then he comes back to try and, what, run Luke over with a flying bike?
I think he's gonna shoot him with his cannon. You know, at that point, okay. Like, stormtroopers didn't have an operational manual how to deal with Jedi. They were extinct.
He should be more concerned about getting away and warning people.
Agreed.
His original goal. Maybe he just got so caught up in it,
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't the original guy that saw that there was a whole platoon of dudes. Like, maybe he assumed that Luke was just an exceptionally well-dressed Ewok. Because apparently Ewok stealing speeder bikes are just a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the scout troopers did not really freak out when an Ewok stole their bike. It's just like, ah, damn it, this is happening again.
Mm-hmm.
Got one of these punk-ass Ewoks stealing our bikes. Like, go get them. Like, I just was like, these guys are just parked out in the jungle, and they see these speeder bikes racing. Like, I don't know that they knew that this guy, because Luke had jammed his comm signal.
Yeah.
I don't know that they knew that he was in, like, hot pursuit to try to warn of this imminent rebel commando strike.
Okay.
But sure, yeah, I'll give you that point.
How does R2 get around in the woods?
Well, the prequels let us know that he has jets.
That's what I figured. He's flying when he's off screen.
Right. Or he's doing that little weird shuffle walk and, like, he's tripping over vines. It is. It's, like, not great. Maybe Luke is, like, levitating him behind him.
I mean, it's a good thing they had him because he had to open the door.
Right.
Or, you know, at least try. But, yeah, he could not get around on that planet.
No, he's really made for... It'd be like trying to take your, you know, remote control car from the linoleum to the yard.
Or to your swimming pool.
Or to your swimming pool, yeah. It just doesn't work. This next part's going to be controversial because of Cupcake Lady. Ewoks were supposed to be... There's supposed to be a Wookiee slave camp.
Yeah, originally they were supposed to be.
Which makes a lot of narrative sense because we know that the Wookiees were enslaved by the Empire and they're physically large and strong and they'd be used for some kind of massive construction project like the Death Star. And mm-hmm. they're supposed to find this Wookiee slave camp and free them. And then you've got an army of Wookiees plus the Rebel Commandos facing off against the 501 or whatever Stormtrooper Legion that the Emperor's best legion is. George Lucas got the bill for how much it was going to cost to get, like, 24 Peter Mayhew, like, tall actors. And he's like, holy crap, let's call up the Screen Guild for Little People. Oh, we can get a bushel of them for 5 cents. All right, chop the Wookiee cut. That's literally what happened.
Wow.
The little people were super cheap, and the tall people were super expensive, so we decided to go with Ewoks instead of Wookiees.
Yeah.
George Lucas
totally what
George
happened.
Lucas wouldn't pay tall people scale is it makes why so, we got Ewoks.
It makes so much more sense, though, because now, look at that scene. I always think, man, Luke could bust out of this at any moment he chooses and take on every single Ewok in the pack.
Right.
I don't know that I feel that if they're 6-7 feet tall, you know?
Right. The other thing, I guess, from a storytelling perspective to make sense, because I'm not an Ewok hater. I'm just saying, like, how cool it would have been to see a bunch of Wookiees rampaging through the Imperials, and maybe a little bit believable. But the other thing that Lucas said is he wanted to tell a story about, like, a primitive people overcoming a highly technically advanced people, which, oh, by the way, doesn't happen in real life. Like, look at world history. Guns versus arrows, mm-mm. People on foot versus horses, mm-mm-mm-mm. People with machine guns versus spears, doesn't work. It works in this space because of the Force or something. But, like, I don't know, like, why. And he's like, well, it would make sense because, like, Chewbacca is the pilot, is the co-pilot of Millennium Falcon. But, like, the point of Wookiees aren't that they're, like if the Wookiees were a primitive people, it's not like they're stupid. It's mm-hmm. just they're primitive. Like, humans haven't gotten smarter or dumber for, like, 100,000 years, but we knew less and we're more primitive. If I went back 10,000 years ago, kidnapped some random Egyptian, and then gave him 4 years of, like, structural engineering class, he could probably, like, wrench on an Atlas rocket or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not too stupid. So, like, I guess the idea that Chewbacca flies a spaceship is not incompatible with the ideas that the Wookiees live on a primitive planet.
So is that why he gave them the whole idea of C-3PO being a god, do you think?
Maybe.
To show that this is a more primitive race?
Oh, for sure. Plus the fact that they're using a bow and arrow and all this stuff.
Well,
like,
yeah, obviously.
But also, like, speaking of C-3PO as a god, is he a god or not?
They think he is. I don't.
Why do they blow him off?
Is.
Like, if your god says, whoa, 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 I don't care what your scripture says, don't eat my friends, and your response is, more wood, get these friends, like, come on, this god's getting cold feet and whole eating his friends thing, let's speed it up. Like, if he didn't let, like you're god or you're not.
Maybe
if
he's
you're
using
god,
the wrong
you
dialect.
Stop and you eat what the god wants to eat. If you're not a god, then you just don't listen to him and you throw your friends on the fire.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I don't know what kind of religion the Ewoks have, but maybe their gods are just kind of like petty and not really powerful, and they're like gold and prissy, and they're kind of wishy-washy, and you don't really let them in on your plans, and you trick them and take advantage of them and dismiss their concern. Yeah, that's totally. That must be their religion. Luke is a devotee of the Ewok religion, it turns out. Why did I write down, hurry up, will ya? I haven't got all day.
Is that some C-3PO god
on
the fire thing?
This is another instance of someone in Star Wars being a complete a-hole to a droid. Like, it's the scene where Han is giving C-3PO, like, three different things to translate.
Oh,
he's
ask
about this, and ask about this, and ask about this, and hurry up, I haven't got all day. And that, like, little half-turn that double take that 3PO makes, like, 3PO is aware that he's undergoing wrongful abuse.
Uh-huh.
And if you're going to create a race of beings that you're going to abuse and treat as equipment, why would you give them the self-awareness to realize that?
Yeah.
That's like in Westworld, they didn't program the Old West sex workers to complain about their lot in life and say, this isn't fair. We want to unionize and we want wages and we want to have say on who we're having sex with. Like, they just did it because that's the whole fantasy. If you're going to make this race of droids and pay no attention to their feelings, why would you program them to have feelings? Why would you give them irony?
Maybe
where is the droid revolt that happens in the Star Wars galaxy? It's had to have happened.
The Last Jedi. All the Jedis are
Have you seen
killed.
Some of the droids in the EU? You've got these, like, planet-sized world devastator droids, like, if they put two, like if they flip the right binary sequence, they're like, you know what? We don't have to put up with this crap. We're called world devastators. All these flesh and blood bags live on things called worlds. We'll devastate them all and rule the galaxy as everlasting gods.
Jawas show up, and then it's all over.
Jawas are the end times for droids, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're
the droid reapers.
They tell scary stories around campfires about Jawas.
Yeah, that's a great moment with Han. It's one of my favorites when he keeps twisting up C-3PO like that. The other one that I really love is when Leia tells him that Luke is her brother, and you can see on his face the moment of realization when he's like, the biggest romantic competition I have has just been eliminated.
But he's still kind of like weird and confusing and like, but I mean, it's a shocking moment. Full on the mouth with tongue kiss him last movie.
Right. It's a little weird, a little gross, and a little like, okay.
Game of Thronesy, sure. Why do stormtroopers wear armor?
To prevent being mangled by rocks and spears, I guess.
But it doesn't really seem to provide any sort of protection. I mean, I know this is a well-worn nerd topic, but for real, it seems like it only makes it hard to see and encumbers them. If your if your plasteel armor can't stop a blaster bolt or a bow and arrow or a well-aimed sling, why the hell are you wearing it? The rebels don't wear armor.
Intimidation.
They figured this out a long time ago.
Intimidation, I think.
Until
you realize that you can take them out with a rock, it's pretty scary.
It looks cool. It looks super cool, but it is the worst, most ineffective armor I've ever seen. But a lot of that stuff is like,
how does the the Ewok attack cause such pandemonium? There is absolutely no discipline in the ranks of the stormtroopers. Because when they attack, stormtroopers run in every direction. They scramble.
I have an answer for this in-universe.
Oh, my God. Okay. I want to hear this
one. I meditated on this long enough. The plan is to lure the rebels into the trap, right?
Uh-huh.
So during the first phase of the assault, until they capture the commando team, the Empire is making a good show of being panicky and disorganized. There's a point in the battle where they capture Han and the other commandos, and you'll notice they start reaping a grim Ewok harvest. Suddenly, those stormtroopers know how to shoot. They got decent tactics. They're killing it, and what turns the tide of the battle is Chewbacca, Tarzan swinging over, and now they got equal firepower. But until then, it was just like a mop-up operation. So I feel like some of that is a little excusable.
Okay.
I mean, like, all this stuff is wildly impractical. Like, why would you have a chicken walker on a forest floor that's just littered with like giant redwood sized things that for them to trip over? Or can you imagine what it's like to be an AT-AT driver, a full size AT-AT driver on Endor? Like taking that thing, like this giant 60-meter tall elephant, and you're like trying to like carefully walk through, or they have to like bulldoze
to
a whole bunch
a
of highways and stuff. Like why would you that this is essentially the Humvee of the Star Wars galaxy, and they're using it in the jungle world. Like
doesn't make sense.
Hoth, lot of sense. Tatooine, knock yourself out. You need something, I don't know, something that flies, like an Imperial shuttle. Why the hell are they transporting Luke Skywalker on an AT-AT walker? They have shuttles. They're all over the place.
They do. Yeah, they flew in on one.
Yeah.
We see them flying in.
Come pick him up, fly above the treetops, and then land at that little landing pad.
Man,
there's an actual landing pad that the AT-AT walker pulls up to.
So many logistical questions. I also wonder why the Emperor says the lightsaber is the weapon of a Jedi.
Yeah.
Why is Darth Vader still using one? He's not a Jedi.
Well, dark Jedi.
Can Darth Vader shoot lightning out of his fingers or not? Is he a Sith? Come on.
That's true. Like, that's... Well, you know, that's the thing. The other thing that bugged me about the prequels is when, like, Palpatine... him and Yoda decide to settle things over a lightsaber battle.
Mm-hmm.
A Jedi Master and a Sith Lord that can hurl entire sections of the Senate at each other and do all kinds of... Like, can lift spaceships out of swamps, and their way to settle a fight is with lightsabers.
It's more elegant.
It looks cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, AT-AT walkers, AT-STs, they look cool. They're very impractical, but they look cool. Stormtrooper armor, impractical, looks cool. Speaking of Ewok death, like, when Ewoks actually start dying, I remember as a kid thinking that that's super heavy.
Yeah.
Like, that scene...
And they linger on it, too.
That scene where the Ewoks, like, it's all fun and games, and, like, one of them dies, and the other comes back. It's like, come on, this is super fun. We're, like, killing these stormtroopers. And he realizes his friend's dead. And
like,
Johnny Williams just takes the volume of the sad music and cranks it to 11. And, like, I just watched a teddy bear get obliterated by space Nazis. How is a seven-year-old
And I watched his buddy have a breakdown over his body.
Like, this is something out of, like... Like a Hamburger
it's
Hill.
It's Band of Brothers, yeah.
Yeah. It's Apocalypse Now. It's Full Metal Jacket in Star Wars with teddy bears.
Would have worked a lot better with Wookiees, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Best lightsaber duel in the original trilogy. Is it Obi-Wan and Vader? It's not.
No, it's not.
Is it Luke versus Vader 1 in Bespin, or is it Luke versus Vader 2 above the forest moon of Endor?
I think it's this one.
I do too.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, they both have a really natural progression, like, you know, Luke being scared of Vader and then get a little bit cocky and then finding out that Vader's just been toying with them until Vader has to lay down the law. That mm-hmm. was cool. And then Vader just effortlessly, when it was time to do it, just dispatches him. Mm-hmm. This, like, the sheer, like there's something predatory about the way that Vader is stalking him through the underbelly of the throne room. And there's, like, this echoing, the Emperor going, good, good, in the background. And he's taunting and saying all this crazy stuff about his sister. And yeah. He's mind-raping Luke Skywalker the whole time. That's the subtext. And when Luke finally has enough of it, mm-hmm. it's fury. He is just beating the old man down, and there's nothing Vader can do about it, because he's letting the hate flow.
Yeah.
And that tells a story, and then Luke rejecting it at the end. Like, every time I watch it, I still get, like, I don't know,
inspiring, chills. Inspiring his father to do the same, you know? I mean, there are a lot of heavy themes and interesting, sort of elemental themes in this that make it, in my mind, a better fight than the Empire Strikes Back fight.
And again, Johnny Williams with that, like, choral, like, almost like a, this mm-hmm. is like a gothic, this is like something like sacred and whole, like this is like what, if there's stained glass windows in the Star Wars universe, it's going to be Luke beating down Vader after he taunts him about turning his sister out.
Yeah.
It's really cool, and I think it's the best lightsaber battle in all of Star Wars. Like,
there are certainly more impressive ones.
Impressive, yeah. But, you know, like, they also don't have a lot of heart and don't make as much narrative sense.
Yeah.
And
this one also leads into what is, in my opinion, one of the most awesome scenes in all of Star Wars, which is the Force Lightning scene from the Emperor.
Right.
Can you imagine? I don't remember how I felt when I saw this as a kid, but in the theaters, if you're watching this for the first time and all you've ever seen a Sith Lord do is swing a lightsaber and kind of walk menacingly down hallways, and suddenly the Force Lightning shows up.
Which we had no idea was a thing.
No idea. So unexpected. So impressive.
He's going to kill Luke Skywalker.
And it's
with
so
raw
hopeless,
power.
Too, right? I mean, Luke Skywalker can do nothing against it. And if it weren't for the fact that Darth Vader is there, he's done.
Right. Do we want to talk about the fan theory that's known as the Endor Holocaust?
I don't know what this is, so yeah, I'm curious.
Okay, so this was popularized by this astrophysicist in England named Curtis Saxton. He was bored one day, and he did a bunch of back-of-the-envelope calculations that, because we know how big the Death Star 2 was. It's about 900 kilometers in diameter. That a structure that large being deorbited above the moon of Endor would be essentially like a extinction-level comet hitting the planet, and like all those Ewoks would have just been obliterated. The whole surface of the moon would be raised.
I've read Seven Eves, so yeah, totally.
There's there's no way you can have that much raw tonnage dump onto a planet and have it. It'd be like
just the friction with the atmosphere itself causes a heat rise to where it kills everything on the planet.
Like, imagine the moon, the Earth's moon, deorbiting and smashing into the planet. It would be terrible. And there's actually, I did some research on this last night, and they actually spent a little bit of EU trying to, Imperial propaganda that they were using that against the rebels is like, yeah, you blew up the Death Star, but what of the Ewoks that lost their lives when all of Endor and like the rebels denying it and
collateral damage?
Yeah, no, it's kind of cool, but it's one of those things that's like,
can you really
know,
ask that question when the whole point of that thing was to blow up planets?
I mean, yeah, like, but you're saying then the Ewoks.
So what should we have
made an unwilling, uninformed, noble sacrifice of their entire planet and species to save the galaxy? Which would be, if like, they signed
heroes.
Up for it, it
heroes.
Would they'd
they
be
get
heroes.
Statues on every other planet.
They should. There should be a statue of an Ewok on every planet in the New Republic.
And I think if you said, hey, you're doing something to help destroy the weapon that blows up other planets, they'd probably be cool with it.
Okay. Do you want to fight about the Yub Yub stuff?
Are we going to fight about it? You actually like the new song? That's a long pause.
Per our panel yesterday, I'm developing tension. People are hanging on my response. I think I like what they were trying to do. So if you see this as one continuous movie prequel,
mm-hmm.
or this movie thing, collection, decology, whatever, sexology, sounds dirty. if you think of this as one big unit, it's kind of cool to see this the come out, like, after you've watched all six of these movies and you've been to all these locations, to, like, if you've been to Coruscant, to zoom out and see, like, the effect that this had on the entire galaxy. The fact that the Emperor is dead,
yeah,
and that the Empire has fallen, and there's an open rebellion. Like, all the galaxy is now the Rebel Alliance, and they're finally deposing all that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sweet. But the music sucks hardcore.
Yep, terrible
and
song.
And the prequels sucked hardcore. So, like, it's just kind of annoying to see Naboo and, like, all these other places. Like, it's a it's like kind of like the lingering fart. And they got the lingering fart in the climax of one of my favorite movies. And so I guess I don't have a problem with them changing it. I just felt like they should have done it better. And also the prequels should have been better. And if they had been better, then this would have worked instead of not working. What's your thoughts?
I think I can go along with that. I really love the Yub Dub song. Yeah, uh-huh. It's great. But I do understand he's trying to, you know, make this less of a localized celebration, more of a galactic thing. So it works on that level. But yeah, the song choice I thought was bad. And honestly, I think they should have gone with maybe the songs that would be appropriate for what they were showing on the screen at the time. So go to Naboo and let's do a Naboo-themed kind of song.
Oh, you
want to
lean into the prequel stuff, huh?
Well, I mean, if you're going to do it, if you're going to change it, why not change it to make more sense? Why this universal song?
Right.
I mean, give the people of those planets an identity rather than just this galactic thing.
I also like in the background, and this isn't a change thing, but like Billy D. Williams just kind of rocking out.
Yeah.
He's doing this kind of like you know, conga thing.
I mean, he, pretty cool. He really is the guy who brought the whole thing down.
Mm-hmm.
He took the last shot.
We haven't even, like, we're running low because, like, at 8 minutes, they release wolves and chase us out of here. But
yeah.
We haven't talked about Return of the Jedi, I still think has the best space battle in the trilogy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, certainly
like,
the biggest.
Like, we haven't talked about it, but, like, the moment to moment, like, action and, like, the fact that you got A-wings and Y-wings and X-wings and B-wings and the mountain calamari cruisers and, like, they're all concentrating fire and taking out the Executor, and it's super cool, and it still holds up like a champ. They didn't have to do any kind of CGI BS to make that viable and to a modern cinematic eye.
You know, I do think I still like the battle in A New Hope better, taking out the first Death Star, because it felt more like a struggle that was almost hopeless. This does have that feel, but it's on such a larger scale that it doesn't feel quite like I'm the X-Wing pilot in the trench and I've got to do this thing. And if I fail, everyone's dead and the countdown is on, you know?
My counter to that is like the momentum shifted to where that desperation is on the Imperial side. Mm-hmm. Like where like the worm has turned and the rebels are getting the upper hand, and like it's now it's not like Luke and Red Leader screaming, it's Admiral
Akbar.
No, Nita, right? No, that's Captain Nita. Piet, right?
I don't know which admiral it is.
But he's the one screaming about concentrating forward firepower, and then he's the one that gets the A-Wing rammed into his bridge and dies.
They really Star Destroyer out pretty easily.
Yeah.
They just blow up one of its batteries, and suddenly the shields drop, and a single ship takes it out.
I could go in the fat. Like, there's the other thing. Is like, I think that that is a fan mistake that has been amplified by the X-Wing video games, because it's kind of preposterous that you take out the Mickey Mouse ears on a Star Destroyer and it's completely unshielded.
Yeah.
Why would those Mickey Mouse ears extend beyond the shield? I think what you're supposed to understand is Admiral Akbar just ordered the entire Rebel fleet to concentrate all firepower on that Super Star Destroyer. Mm-hmm. They did so. It battered the shields down that then allowed the A-Wing to smash into the bridge and take out the ship.
I mean, there's a lot of design flaws.
But you see,
in that
you see and the evidence of the fact that the Star Destroyer is vulnerable is that they do blow up the Mickey Mouse ear, because if the shields are up, they wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah.
But like the Lucas Arts people saw that and went, herder. If you take out the Mickey Mouse ears, the Star Destroyer is vulnerable, and you can blow it up with one X-Wing and X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Yeah.
Which is super fun, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. But then again, we've just spent this whole podcast talking about how the Emperor's technology. Hell, I've just convinced myself the Mickey Mouse ears stick out of the shield and they're vulnerable just so the Rebels have a fighting chance. The Imperials are they're sporting. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you our styrofoam armor and our ungainly chicken walkers and our Mickey Mouse ears that are ridiculously easy to destroy and just lay us to waste. We're still going to beat you, except we didn't. And now who's got the last laugh?
Young Anakin has the last laugh.
Oh, my God. I don't care that they put Hayden Christensen's face in the end of Return of the Jedi. What bugs me is Yoda should be young and Obi-Wan should be Ewan McGregor. Like, if the idea that, like, as your best self, as your youngest, most vital, heroic version of yourself, then all those Force ghosts should be vital in the prime of their lives, in perfect health, and all that. It's like the Sesame Street thing. One of these things doesn't belong here. You've got, you know, vital strapping teenage Anakin with old ass Obi-Wan Kenobi and super old 900-year-old Yoda. I want to see like a bright green Yoda, no lines on his face. He's like looking fresh. He's got like impeccable Jedi robes. I want to see Ewan McGregor like twirling his mustache and looking dapper and like, you know, Attack of the Clones era Ewan. And then you can throw in Hayden Christensen and it's fine. But having everybody else old and then young, it doesn't make any sense.
There are a lot of complicated arguments on that, more than we have time for in 4 minutes. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't like just young Anakin being stuck in there. Especially with the hack job that they did with the CGI on it too.
Yeah,
the compositing was not great.
Yeah. All right, we are now ensconced safely in the friendly confines of the Bald Moose Studio. Mm-hmm. Not that Huntsville is unfriendly.
No, it wasn't. But this is much more comfortable.
Yeah, I got my chair. Got my favorite microphone.
I only have one person staring at me instead of
five,
six. Yeah, there were at least seven people there, I think.
A half baker's dozen. So, again, as we said in the outset, this was we got the wrap up. We got the important part. The dedication. This was again commissioned by Fernando Rodriguez, which you might recognize better from Fern from NYC.
Mm-hmm.
On the forums, and he said that this podcast is dedicated to the newest addition of my family, Ellie, who was born back in February. In the same spirit of the Goonies podcast, I can't wait to sit down with my two girls and enjoy watching the Star Wars trilogy through their eyes. For your information, I've already shown A New Hope to Katie, who is now 5 years old, and she loved it. Hmm. Yeah, that's about how old I was, or that's about how old Jack was when I started him on that. Now for the final movie in the Fern trilogy, we've had started with Child Adventure, next was Drama and Spirituality, which he's referring to Goonies, and what dreams may come. Mm-hmm. And we finished with Sci-Fi Adventure at the 1983's Return of the Jedi. My personal favorite of the trilogy. I couldn't believe this was missing in the Bald Move podcast library, and it made my choice very easy. First, I will acknowledge that The Empire Strikes Back is the best of the Star Wars movies, but Return of the Jedi is the first Star Wars film I saw in theaters. For my money, as the best lightsaber duel, an epic space battle, me and you, Fern, and I feel like it's the most fun of all the trilogy movies. I guess I'm still just a big kid. I mean, that's an important point. If we're just talking about fun, Return of the Jedi might well be my favorite Star Wars.
Certainly more fun than Empire Strikes Back.
But I get caught up with best.
Yeah.
Because Empire's just so damn good. It's so good. And it's like its goodness is a pleasure and fun all to itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I can't argue with someone's subjective opinion, especially when it's rooted in a childhood theater experience. I don't have much to add other than four or five nerdy bullet points, since I'm sure you can go hours talking about Return of the Jedi. We made it 90 minutes anyway. I'll just sit back and enjoy the magic. Thanks again. Here are the bullet points. How much time do you think has passed from the end of Empire to the start of Return of the Jedi?
That's a real good question. I would say a year.
I think canonically it's been 6 months.
Six months?
I think they established that, because there's... I've read all of the Star Wars novelizations, the movie novelizations, and there's a scene that was supposed to be, and I think they filmed this, of Luke finishing a Skywalker or his lightsaber and like making the final preparations with Leia and Chewie to like rescue Han, and they mention like explicitly it's been 6 months.
Okay.
Whereas there's several years between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. But I don't know. It could be a year. It could be a few. It can't be that long, though, right? I mean, how long has Han been chilling in carbonite?
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
17 years.
And the other cast hasn't aged a day.
Nope. Well, I mean, it's future medicine. It's future medicine.
They've been in the Bacta tanks.
Right. And the Empire funded all that future medicine, which is why, like, Hamill, or why Luke and Leia have aged so rapidly in The Force Awakens.
Right.
You know, just like, yeah, you go overthrow the Empire, but now your standards of living crash. But at least we're free, right? I always find it funny when Jabba surprises Han and Leia that one of the Jabba's goons is covering C-3PO's mouth. Oh, right. I don't think it works that way.
Maybe that's where his speaker is.
But still, like, I mean, yeah, I guess it would work that way, maybe, but I just feel like his head's a hollow metal box. It's like a speaker box.
Yeah.
It'd be like trying to cover the front of like some kind of desktop speaker.
Uh-huh.
It maybe muffle it, but it'd still work pretty good. I don't know. He wants us to talk about Princess Leia in a sleeve outfit. I think we handled that.
They start laughing before like they really open the door or anything, before they reveal, hey, we're here.
Right.
Are they like watching from monitors?
Yeah, it must
something?
Be like a closed cut, you know,
yeah,
closed.
Like CCTV sort of thing.
Right. Jabba's got prowler cams, right? And the first boom, they wake up and they're like, what's going on? And oh my God, look at this. Someone's thawing out Han.
Yep.
That droid is being branded at Jabba's palace. What's the deal? Can it feel pain? Is it just programmed response to heat? Oh boy, Fern, we got you covered there.
Yep.
As you probably already know. Why didn't the Emperor send or have a stormtrooper call for that big-ass AT-AT to wipe out the rebels and the Ewoks? I know it's on the planet since we saw it when Vader sees Luke after he turns himself in.
They did. It just took a really long time
to get there. They have to have that chainsaw Mad Max mobile cut a path in the forest to get there, whereas the scout walkers could just kind of nimble their way through it. Although, this is at the rear entrance to the garrison, so, like, shouldn't there be a couple patrol lanes anyway?
Probably. I mean, they have to move supplies somehow.
Right. I think the writers are on the Ewok side.
Yeah.
Because else, yeah. I mean, because what the fuck would the Ewoks do to an AT-AT?
Not much. I don't even know if their tree trick would work. They're smashing logs.
Yeah, I think the AT-AT walker would just smash it like those. Like, they'd be like toothpicks. It'd be like trying to trip me up with toothpicks. So it's not going to work. Plus, I'm bipedal.
Mm-hmm.
You got that four leg stability.
Yeah, quadruped.
Yeah, try tripping a horse with marbles. I don't think you can do it. I don't know how many banana peels.
I would
you
like
got.
To see somebody try though. It'd probably be pretty funny.
It'd probably be like that. What was that show that HBO canceled with Dustin Hoffman? It's the horse racing show, but like they had to cancel it because like three horses died it turns out horses are super fragile.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, you could totally do the marble experiment, but you'd probably maim like off screen. They drag the horse and like the chute cause he broke all three of his feet.
Plus
you start with a three-legged horse. Right. What kind of fucking Nazi experiment are we running here? Give the horse a fighting chance. Jesus, Aaron. Finally, after seeing both the original updated version of Return of the Jedi countless times, I feel the best mix would be to keep the music that Jabba's band plays from the original cut, also remove Boba Fett flirting with the girl. All right, so far so good. Mm-hmm. But you keep the new Ewok song from the update.
No.
That ends the movie, and of course you remove Hayden Christensen from The Force Ghosts and put back Sebastian Shaw.
Yes, you put back Sebastian Shaw, but you got to keep the Yub-Nub. You got to keep it. That's my favorite part of the whole movie.
I mean, I think the new, like, I defended what they were trying to do with the new cut.
Sure,
but the
I understand what they're trying to do.
Uninspired and new agey and just kind of crappy. So,
and the old song is iconic. Everybody knows that song.
Yeah, you see the whole universe unite in a Yub Nub. That's what they should have gone. Like
the
Coruscant
Galactic
saying
Yub-Nub.
It. Alderaan wouldn't be saying it.
No, they're not saying anything.
Alderaan would not be saying it, but yeah, they're saying it in Coruscant. They're saying it in Malastar. They're saying it on Bespin. They're Yub-Nubbing in Kashyyyk.
Mm-hmm. That'd be the true irony.
Yubnubbing on Corellia.
Is that that's a native Kashyyyk song, actually.
Oh, really?
So they
the
swapped
Ewoks
out
have appropriated
the Ewoks.
It?
Yeah, they swapped out the Ewoks for the Chewie's race. What are they fucking called?
Wookiees?
Wookiees,
yeah. You had Kashyyyk and you couldn't summon Wookiee from the memory
I'm
banks?
I'm only halfway through my coffee this morning.
Someone put a restraining bolt on Jim again. Get
but,
it off.
But they didn't take out the native song, the indigenous song, so.
No, see, the Wookiee song is Nub Yub. The Ewoks is, yeah, it's similar dialect, but, you know, just a little different. Just a little different. Yeah, I mean, Return of the Jedi, they just shouldn't have fucked with the period. Like, if they wanted to clean up the matting like they did in Empire Strikes Back, but it still looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm kind of surprised that George didn't try to do something crazy like replace the Rancor or something like that, because it's just so good. And same thing with Hoth. Like, they put some scenes back. Like, I know there's an extended version of Luke and the Wampa ice monster. I know they added some more color to Bespin. That might be an unfortunate choice of words, seeing how Lando's the only black guy in the old Star Wars trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
They added some world building by taking those stale, kind of sterile hallways and putting CGI windows and adding some traffic to it. Like, those are fine,
mm-hmm.
but really, really everything, in my opinion, in Return of the Jedi is essentially a detriment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. Maybe Fern didn't say why he liked the new Ewok song. But I without knowing that piece of it, I don't know what I'd say. Don't know how to engage with you there, Fern. But thank you for letting us watch Star Wars Return of the Jedi and made a damn fine, fun podcast to do down in, Huntsville, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And, we hopefully will be getting back to our regular scheduled, the commission podcast in the future. We apologize to everyone we had to skip because of this business decision we made, but you know, nothing personal.